The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome to Dietary Requirements, the spin-off's food podcast. Ko Simon Day toko ingoa. And I am your host. As always, I'm joined by my friends Alice Neville, the spin-off's food editor.
Kia ora.
You can probably hear Alice seasoning our big jug of Bloody Mary.
It's looking good.
And we've
got food
boss of delicious business, Sophie Gilmore, fresh off a flight from the US.
Kia ora, Simon.
Welcome home.
Thanks very much.
And another person returning home today is our special guest and close friend of the spin-off, Metro Magazine editor Henry Oliver.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, Henry.
Hi, guys.
Henry is with us today because last night he had the formidable, intimidating... And probably quite scary task of deciding the best restaurants in Auckland. Alice was also on the judging panel.
I was.
Wasn't decided last night, but, you know,
announced last night.
It was a joke. But thank you for having us last night, Henry.
Oh, thanks for coming.
It was really, really fun.
Cool. I'm so envious. I really loved it last year, and I was sad to miss it. I mean, not that I would be invited, but I was sad to miss it.
Well, as a food influencer and co-host of Dietary Requirements,
I don't know if that
got top of the
you'd
list.
Be top of the
I actually went as Everybody Eats Plus One last year, so that was a good way to weasel in there. Mm.
But I drank a billion Negronis.
I drank a million.
Simon is absolutely professional at getting his money's worth out of any free gig.
Free well, stuff
when,
is my
when Campari came on as a sponsor, there was sort of some concern that it would lead to a kind of unruly drunkenness. And so we actually kind of, they talked about sort of starting the night with Negronis and then segueing into Campari and sodas. But then they were just walking around with like huge trays of Negronis all night.
Coming at you from all angles. Yeah.
I think also a lot of people don't know what Negroni is, and because it's become more trendy, they say, I'll have a Negroni. Yeah. It's straight liquor.
Yeah.
You know, it's delicious though.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. But I think
fuck you up.
Yeah, we went to a, I did some cocktails for a friend's 30th last year, and one of the things that I did was Negroni. And it's like the kind of drunkenness that just smacks you in the face about an hour later. So the party went from being quite civil to just, what have I done within an hour?
It happened to me last night. It was one of those ones where I was talking to myself in the mirror in the toilet.
Having a word with Simon.
Yeah, you're doing good, Simon.
But as a result, we're all a little hungover. So today we're eating our favourite hungover food. I've brought cold pizza. Sophie's made the most delicious pimped out packet ramen with dumplings.
So good.
We've got a Bloody Mary courtesy of Melissa at the Ponsonby Road Bistro.
Yep.
Cooked up by Alice just now.
Should I pour it?
Please.
Dude, pour it.
But I want to tell you all what I've got for my hangover food. Cheezels. Yay.
I just can't cheer.
That's very loud on the microphone as well.
I'm willing to taste
food
one,
of the gods.
Yeah, I'm actually judging you.
So we're going to
feel sorry for you.
We're going to munch away and drink away feeling a little sorry for ourselves. Sophie can count as being hungover because she's very jet lagged.
Yeah, I'm in. Always in for a drink.
But we're going to talk about how you choose the best restaurant in Auckland and why those that won. But first, we have a shout out to our wonderful sponsors, Freedom Farms. They make the food section and dietary requirements possible. And they believe that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how those animals were farmed. And they're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range chicken and eggs. You can buy their bacon, you can buy their eggs, and you can buy their chicken at all good supermarkets. And if you can't, you should go tell their manager at that supermarket that you want it. You can also read about the diverse world of bacon cuts on the spinoff.co.nz. That's a cool story written by Sophie. And it shows you all the best recipes with the different cuts because you shouldn't use streaky for everything.
Touché.
And bacon is also one of the world's great hangover cures. So thank you, pigs, and thank you, Freedom Farms, for looking after us. So, Henry, how long did it take you to get through the judging process?
We sort of judged in two parts. So we had the kind of initial run, which was, I think about 2 months long, which was 12 judges, including Alice. Each had a sort of varying number of assignments, but mostly around sort of five or six restaurants. Came back. From there, we tried to find out like which decisions we could come to, which needed to be revisited, rechecked, and then gradually made our way towards category winners. And then once we had the category winners, we invited a guest judge over from Australia. We spent a weekend taking him to the six category winners, and he chose the supreme winner from those six.
Who is he?
Pat Nurse. So he is creative director of Food and Wine Festival of Melbourne, previously of Gourmet Traveller. He is also the New Zealand, Australia, and Oceania judge, head judge, chair judge, something for World's Top 50 Restaurants. So,
oh, nice. I love that you did that. I think also that halts a few of the naysayers in their tracks.
I think
people feel as though there's a lot of bias and a lot of repetition.
Yeah.
And it's a really great shout to just bring someone objective in.
I think it's a mixed thing because we were conscious of that. Like, we wanted an outsider. That's great. We didn't think, oh my God, he could pick. Cassia was a category winner. He could come over and pick Cassia. Sid and Chand would have won for the fourth year in a row, like that could have happened. And even though, and that's a weird kind of editorial outcome, but that could happen, we knew that he would see things differently than we would. He doesn't know which restaurants are kind of cool or which restaurants people are bored of or which restaurants are, always super busy and which,
things, isn't it? The people always say, oh, the foodies talk about the same restaurants. The foodies go to the same restaurants.
Yeah.
And then, Joe Bloggs will say, but is this representative of what Aucklanders think? And, that kind of thing. So I just think it's a really great move.
Yeah, same.
Genius. And despite a good night for Sid and Chand, Restaurateur of the Year, Cassia won Best Casual. Is that the right category?
Best Smart.
Best Smart. Hmm. there were 16 categories. I can't remember.
No, fair enough. I've got a list.
But it was.
My casual.
One of their staff won something too.
It was. It was Pastia and its chef Ed Werner who took out the Supreme Award and Best Chef Award. I've yet to eat at Pastia, Henry. It's a unique experience. It's unlike any other restaurant in New Zealand, probably.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what it's like to sit at a room of six people?
So there's six seats along the bar at the pass, two seatings a night. You book for either 5:45 or 8:15. When you book, you get an email that says, be on time, or be early. So we booked for the 8:15, turned up at 8:10, and you go to the door and it's locked. So you pull up the handle and it's locked and you think,
right,
this is a really weird thing. This is not hospitality, that like that's not, doesn't feel hospitable. And then you see a sign and it says doors open and they open at exactly that time. Ed comes through, opens the door, brings you in, pours you your first drink, which is a non-alcoholic drink. And for the next sort of 3+ hours, you're just taken care of by three people, Ed and his two chefs, Agata and Tatsuya. And there's just the three chefs. There's no one else. There's no one else there. There's no front of house. They are the front of house. There's no one pouring your wine. They're pouring your wine. There's no one making your cocktails. They're making your cocktails. They're sweeping the breadcrumbs from the bar. They're cooking, obviously, all the food. And all of that happens, like, right in front of you. Like, you're...
From scratch?
No, so there's things sort of... it's hard. Some of it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, there are things sort of prepped,
yes,
obviously.
But it sounds like it's not just an assembly piece in front,
no,
of you. Like, they're really preparing.
No. So, and because it's quite theatrical in that way, in a very sort of thespian sense, where, like, you'll be eating something and you'll see right in front of you, most of the food's also cooked over an open flame, by the way. So they'll hang a basket of tomatoes sort of high over the flame. You see that happening. You're like, oh, yeah. And then in sort of four dishes' time, those tomatoes are your dish, and you know, it's sort of 30 minutes later or something, and there's a lot of that kind of, you see prep happening, you see foreshadowing, you see people working on something, and you're like, you're like, what's that? And then 40 minutes later, that'll be your dish, you know.
It sounds really like a performance.
It is.
Would you want to go with a group of six, or is it better that there's just two of you and you're focusing on what's happening?
I mean, I went as a pair. There's not a lot of room in the initial kind of, so that's, to get into the kind of detail, that's the sort of savoury courses. You're at the bar. Then you retire to the lounge for the dessert courses, and you sit on couches and chairs for dessert. If you go on the first seating, you're having dessert while the next six come into the bar.
Okay.
But if you're in the second seating, you're just sitting around
by
yourselves in the restaurant, you know, and it's candlelit. So, yeah, it's – I mean, I was talking about this with my wife, who I went with, and, you know, we're now talking about, like, maybe it'd be interesting to try it with it, maybe even just four people.
Maybe just not someone you only see once a year because you don't get to chat.
Yeah, and it's not – I mean, it's, I think that needs to be said. You know, it's not a restaurant for every occasion. It's probably not the – best place to sort of, you know, catch up with your sibling who lives overseas, or to get, I mean, you know, although you do end up drinking quite a lot, I gotta say.
True.
If you do the alcohol pairing.
How much does it cost?
So it costs a lot.
Yeah.
It's the most expensive set menu in Auckland. I'm sure you could spend more.
Is it $2.50 a head?
I think it changes menu to menu. I think the current menu is $2.40.
Yeah.
You know, wines are, you know, the alcoholic pairing is 100.
I always find that quite fascinating because, well, New Zealanders typically spend the same amount on booze as they do on food.
Oh, right.
So I would have thought that the split would be a bit different.
But then also there's a non-alcoholic pairing, which is almost as expensive as the alcoholic pairing. So that's,
it is amazing.
That's sort
of like, they were giving a lot of praise about that.
That's like $90.
Yeah.
And I went the last night of a week, so I went on a Sunday night. So they were getting rid of a lot of the non-alcoholic beverages that they prepared and some of the sort of, you know, perishable fruit stuff.
Yes.
And so I actually was lucky enough to get sort of around half of the courses, the non-alcoholic as well. And,
right.
And it's amazing. I mean, it's kind of like, it's non-alcoholic drinks kind of like, I've just never really had anywhere else.
What is the one? Someone was telling me that they had it the other day. God, this is hopeless of me. And it is, it's something you would absolutely not expect to drink. Like, it's not fruit. Was there a fish?
They make some crazy stuff. So.
Yeah, there's some sort of, there's a fish-based beverage, I think, that part of the non-alcoholic accompaniment and apparently delicious.
Oh.
But
yeah.
Certainly threw me off.
Yeah.
Fish-based beverage.
Yeah.
So all this is happening, you know, and I mean, I should mention that you say theatrical, and the most theatrical thing is there's a dish called New Zealand Wagyu and ACDC, and if you go to the second seating, before he cooks the steak over this open flame, the lights go down, ACDC's Hell's Bells starts playing quite loud, it's like, dun, ding, with bells. And then he's just fanning the fuck out of the flame, and it gets, the flame gets really big. And then he's cooking these steaks on this like super big flame.
Kind of sounds like a spoof.
And there's this like, it kind of is. And it's like, and there's this AC/DC song blaring. And could be so wrong, but it's so right when you're there. You know?
Awesome. Yeah, well, that's it, right? You want an immersive experience, particularly if it's as intimate as there.
And that one, really that one dish of the year.
That was the winner of the dish of the year, yeah. And it was, I mean...
Did it blow your mind?
It blew my mind. And it wasn't just that. I mean, if that had happened in a back room and he brought that dish out, I mean, I can't say because I haven't experienced this, but... It was one like that one was one of the dishes where I was just like, holy shit, this is something you're so familiar with, and it's just the best version I've ever tasted. You know?
Awesome.
Like it's steak and some a sort of a roll of greens, you know.
That's
and,
what
and
I a, love a sauce, though, when you know? People really passionately cook and absolutely get the best out of the ingredients. Like,
yeah.
That's what chefs are supposed to do, right?
Yeah, and then, I mean, and then, you know, and then he brings down the cow later and, you know, he's bought this Wagyu cow from this guy
cow.
Who, like, he only sells...
Not a living cow, son.
It's a, like, Pasture's the only restaurant he sells to in New Zealand. The rest of it goes to Japan. And he can only get it because he buys the whole cow.
Yeah.
And, you know, he ages it himself. Like, so, you know, it's on his premises for 3 months before he starts cutting into
it. It's just turbo everything.
It's everything. It's turbo everything. And that's what you're, you know, like, it's the most expensive, it's, you know, it's probably the most expensive restaurant in Auckland, but it's probably one of the least profitable restaurants in Auckland,
yeah. Yeah, totally. Imagine the, I mean, the wage.
It wasn't shy about sort of sharing that last night. It was interesting. It's
real for him, you know, like he's there's a piece in the new issue that I wrote about Pasture, and you know, he was saying that he needs 10 people a night to break even, and if you think about 12 people can come a night,
yeah,
if you fall short of that, you know, that's really hard to make up, you know.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
that's a kind of razor edge.
And do you know what I would say to that, though, is that sustainable? I mean, maybe he should just it to be a little bit more profitable and give himself a little bit of breathing room. That sounds agonizing. And I mean, I know how it feels. There is no stone on your chest like the financial pressure stone when you run a restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to breathe.
Well, what surprised me was that he got 2 6 seats through kind of financial problems. So, that, you know, they had, I think they opened at 30 seats, quite quickly went down to 24, went to 20. And then, you know, they were just not filling 20 seats.
Yeah.
And he just cut it and cut it and cut staff until it was just, what if I just had 6 people, you know? And what if we don't have front of house? Because, you know, his wife was the, you know, front of house for a long time, and she left him, and he was like, what if I don't replace that role? What if we just do it, you know, like, and find chefs who want to do this, you know,
and
do this kind of thing.
I think that it's really cool, the flexibility, or at least the willingness to revisit the restaurant model as it is. You know, we've got immigration tightening up, we've got food costs rising. Now we've got wages rising as well, and something's got to give. And whether we can pass it on to the consumer and get away with it is a whole other question. But, you know, maybe you do need to rethink the model and go, how do we do this? Like, can normal restaurants just move to counter service so they don't have to have floor staff?
Or
you know, things like that need to be considered.
Yeah, and I think for Pasture, my assumption is that if it got popular enough, you know, maybe he could do a third seating.
Yes.
You know, do one a little earlier and then kind of pull the rest later. And then if you had 18 people, you maybe only need, you know,
then
12 a night, you know, and then you can actually start making money, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like I've never spoken to anyone that's eaten at Pasture that hasn't really loved the experience.
Yeah.
And that really ranges from like, friends' parents that are in their 70s that are just so wowed and impressed by the innovation, right down to people that decided to go and fork out in the city that they live in just out of curiosity. So that's cool because I think it's not for everyone, that kind of dining. And, you know, the whole – my mum, for example, she's been and she really liked it, whereas had I presented it to her on a piece of paper, she would just say – must the boundaries be pushed all the time? Why can't I just have some delicious food?
Yeah, and it could be quite an uncomfortable experience as well, you know, like having these people and being kind of being in their face, them being in your face. You know, they, you know, it's not loud or anything, but, you know, he does come and sort of critique the dish and moves things around and he sees something done in a way that is not to his standards, and he fixes it, and you see all that stuff happening, and it's kind of odd, you know. Like, I think if you're not up for it, you could be like, I don't want to see that stuff.
I've
been a couple of times before they went down to the six seater, and even that was bloody intense, you know. So I can't imagine how it is now. Like, amazing, mind blowing, but it's
literally
certainly
amazing,
different to anything else I've ever been to.
Yeah, well, I'm stoked for them that they've won the award, and I, for whatever reason, haven't been there yet, and I feel as though because I'm kind of in a season where I'm not that interested in fine dining, but there's no excuse, and I'm off to pasture.
It doesn't feel like fine dining in the way I've traditionally.
It's not. I mean, it is definitely fine dining. I mean,
I think I just looped it in with
but
that.
But it's also like you could rock up there in shorts and a t-shirt, you know, like totally. And the music is not what you expect, and the lighting is not what you expect, and as you know,
it's like hipster fine dining. I mean, when I went to Momofuku,
like dive bar fine dining
in New York years ago, and I remember it was my favorite restaurant experience ever.
Because there's like 16 seats or something, right?
12, or maybe 16. Yeah. But I remember, so the chefs are all wearing flat peak hats and talking to you, and there was hip hop like blaring over the speakers. And I was like, this is fucking cool. Like, I don't want to go and sit in a silent room that's carpeted. And, you know, that was for me, Attica, when I was in Melbourne when I was about 21. I was like, oh, we might need to go and do something fun after this.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. And that's, I mean, that's really, I mean, I feel like I said this word so much in my speech last night, but so much of it comes down to fun, you know, that it is like, it's kind of crazy. The food is delicious, like, and mind-blowing and kind of sublime, but it's also really fun, you know, like, and it is, it's a night, you know, it's not, you know,
it's not just a meal.
No. So I think that's partly where the pricing thing comes in for me anyway, is like, yes, it's really expensive.
But you'd pay that for a ticket to Beyonce.
Exactly. You know, like you would. And you would go like, you would also have to eat dinner that night and buy drinks. And, you know, you like I think if you think that's about fair. It slightly different, yes, it's food.
As an artistic
yes,
experience.
It is like dinner. It is your dinner. It's also something else. You
know? A memory and an experience.
Really clever how they responded to the fact that everyone's moving away from fine dining, and you know, there's been these headlines like, "Is fine dining dead?" by sort of bringing in those casual the elements of, that we love about casual dining, and you know, just sort of mashing it up with the
tell you who love fine dining Americans
really
oh yeah they're still
they're
so
weird,
deep in
they?
It they love it
yeah.
Americans love pasta. He
oh great,
he gets a lot of custom from Americans, I think.
Well, I went to 11 Madison Park a couple of weeks ago, and pasture sounds like more fun.
So it's got to be fun. But how do you judge a restaurant, Henry? How do you compare? So the finalists for the Supreme winner were Pasture, Cazador, Amano, Apero, Cassia, and 372. How do you compare those 2, 4, 6, 7 restaurants? Because they are very different.
Yeah, I mean, so the primary thing is the food, you know, that's number one, but it's certainly not everything. It's the service, it's the fit out, it's the music, it's the vibe,
it's Marbo.
It's the it's the like feel, you know, and
Like an overall experience.
Yeah, and a lot of it is like, do you want to go back? Or what, yeah. You know, do you want to send people there? And I think that was one of the things is like, there's a sense in which we as a publication are telling people like, you should go to this restaurant. Do we want to do that? Like, you know,
yes.
And
yeah.
Are people going to be...
the responsibility of that. If someone's in Auckland for 4 days
yeah.
and they
yeah.
use the Metro list as the things that they can't miss in Auckland.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's that not like, reasonable. That's not a surefire thing. You know, like there are, you know, everyone's got different tastes and different, has different experiences, has different expectations. So, but it's our best effort to go... as if we were telling a friend, like, oh, you want to go to a fine dining restaurant? This is the one we think you should go to. You want to go to a casual restaurant? This is the one we think you should go to. Mm. And it's kind of how much you want to tell people that almost is how you kind of rank them against each other. You know, like, so how well do they fulfill what you want out of that type of restaurant?
How many judges do you have?
This year we had 12.
Was it a consensus, or are there still some judges who are like, fuck Henry, he doesn't know what he's talking about?
That well, just,
not to his there, face probably,
there,
Simon.
No, I mean, there wasn't necessarily consensus on all awards. I think there were awards where there definitely kind of was consensus. Some of them are, you know, we get the judges to sort of fill out a judging report, which is both numbers and also, you know, words. So
it's a lovely spreadsheet.
It's a description, and then it's like by the different categories, sort of points allocated to come out with a score. And then I think the biggest factor really is sitting around a table and talking about it. And I think that's where you go, like, you know, what was your experience with this? How do we compare it to that? What do you guys think if this and that? And you know what I mean? Like these different kind of mm-hmm. outcomes. And we, you know, it's hard because, you know, you can't send every judge to every restaurant. So you can't get everyone going like, well, we all went to these restaurants and so we all can kind of rank them. Like, you just can't do that.
So do you intentionally choose a diverse panel?
Yeah, I mean, we chose a panel. I think this is definitely a kind of issue. I mean, we chose a bigger panel than we've had for a few years at least, I think.
Right. That's got to be a good thing.
Yeah. It could be more diverse. It's, you know, it's... let's be honest, it's predominantly white women.
A lot of white women.
Are they food?
All very lovely white
New
women.
New Zealand foodies? Are they journalists mainly? Are they food critics?
Yeah, a combination of all of those.
That, right.
They're
restaurateurs?
There have been ex-restaurateurs.
Oh.
So in celebration of Simon Bridges, we've brought a slushing machine into the office.
Thank you,
and
guys.
It's taken a very long time to slush. But now we have tequila and is it orange?
I don't even know what was in that one.
Tequila and passion fruit slushy, which is very exciting.
I went home all dolled up for the awards last night and left everyone else to deal with the slushy machine arrival.
But I'll just say, like, I think we could be more diverse. I think we want to get more diverse. You've also got, I think there is a sort of, there's a structural issue, if you will, that because not every judge can go to every restaurant, it helps to kind of know something about the tastes and the interests and sort of the experience and prior experience of the judges, so they tend to be people we've worked with before,
yes.
Or people that we work with have worked with before.
Sure.
So that kind of that's a limitation on who you can bring in. I mean, I definitely think we should be moving beyond that.
I think more numbers sounds good. I mean, it gives you a fairer result in the end. I think ultimately, and I said this to you before, it's a bit of a thankless task in the sense that it would be difficult for you guys to make this announcement and for everyone to go, well done, Metro.
Yeah.
Great job.
Done it again.
I see so much criticism of it online, and I hear people taking the conversation in such a different direction to what I understand is trying to be achieved by this list. So it is based on Metro's idea of what ABS restaurant is, and Metro explains that every year. So that is the criteria that the restaurant, that the list should then be accountable to, rather than people saying, is this diverse enough? What about the cheap eats on Dominion Road?
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of thing, because it really is a can of worms, I think. And
Totally. And I think, you know, people want different things out of dining experiences. If, you know, there is a lot of people who are more into food than they are into dining, restaurant. I think, you know, and there is really great food all over the place. And I mean, I think
without the rest of the hospitality.
And I think Metro celebrates that food as well in different contexts.
I love the cheap eats.
But it's you know, it's a certain it is a certain idea of what a good restaurant is, and that could, you know, that could do with some diversification as well, of course. And I think that has, you know, has changed and will continue to change, like what a Metro type of good restaurant is, has always been changing.
Well,
you know, and will continue
that
to change.
What is New Zealand cuisine is kind of an evolving question, isn't it? So, yes, you might have a different idea next year because we have more native cuisine to choose from.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you might make a specific point of sending people to more, you know, Indigenous food restaurants. But I think that it's, on the whole, you guys do a really good job of making something that the industry are proud of, and whether or not they say they care about it.
Yeah.
They really do.
Well, that's the thing. So, I mean, people, you know, I've had, a few sort of nasty emails. So, and it also, it's fine. You know, to me, that's saying, like, people care about it, and that's great. And
there's no one else in that lane, right?
Yeah.
And anyone's doing it?
I think one of the things that needs to be kind of, well, I mean, I see is kind of obvious, but maybe isn't considered by a lot of people, is that it is an editorial task. And in every editorial task, you're choosing something at the expense of something else. So, you know, every story that's on the spin-off could be a different story. Like, every time you choose to write about something, you are, in effect, choosing not to write about an infinite array of other things, you know?
Yeah, and you don't have five lists.
That's true of restaurants as well, you know? I mean, I don't know how many restaurants there are in Auckland. I would assume it's
heaps.
2,000? Yeah. I don't know, you know? Like, I would love to find out if there's 2,000 restaurants, but I would assume it's something around there. Can we go to those? Like, no. But, you know, so there's an editorial process.
On that note, do you think, this is a question that I'm interested in, do you think we have 50 top restaurants in Auckland? Do you think that number's right? I mean, I think it's generous. And I don't mean that I don't think that we, that, I don't think Auckland is lacking great restaurants. But I think that for the profile that this list is aimed at, I think 50's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Lorraine Jacobs got in touch and said, why isn't it 100, you know, or 200?
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So I think
you say, who's going to pay
it's also
that?
Kind of, I mean, that's part of it. But it is essentially like there is, when you're doing a list, there is an arbitrary cutoff, you know, and we could.
Totally.
You know,
it would be awesome to see 100 or 200, but then I guess that would change the scope.
But the other way to do it would be like, Metro's picks of the year, in one year it could be 28, and the next year it could be 43.
Well,
and
I always wonder why Eater have that 38 essential restaurants list. I wonder how they landed on 38 and whether it's 38 every year.
Don't know.
Is that just taking the piss?
No, I think that that's their,
like, they think it's a joke to be like, oh, let's do it 38. Yeah. Like, there's no,
I feel like that guy that they hire to go around the States, he's not had a home address for 3 years or something, and he does go around the States every year and chooses the 38 essential restaurants. And I had always wondered whether they thought they'd go for 50, but they didn't quite, you know, they weren't proud of 39.
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know. It's definitely that bottom the end of the list is really difficult. You know, the end of the list is when you're going, you know, I think there's less separation between the restaurants that we've thought of as, say, you know, this comes out at the sort of 46th place and this one's at 53, and, you know, which ones are we going to cut to?
There's not a huge amount of difference in that part of the range.
So that's really difficult. I think that's as much as who's going to be the winner and the runner-up of a category where you're kind of like getting into quite fine detail about, well, this wasn't quite right. You kind of get into that a little bit at the end of the list as well, you know, of like, well, this was just slightly better because of this. This was, you know, maybe this wasn't as good as it could be.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, the restaurants who kind of come into the rankings in, say, like the 30s, you know, or the 20s, who are probably not winning a category award, but they've just very obviously part of our top 50.
Yeah.
Like, they're very obviously of a standard where we consider them to be included. They're just like, oh, yeah, they're a really good restaurant. You know, they're in there. But you're checking to see that there's still a really good restaurant, you know, like that something hasn't happened over the last year or whatever.
Yes.
But there's less kind of concern over like fine detail, I think, than the bottom of the list and obviously the top.
It's like inviting people to your wedding.
Yeah, really exactly.
The drinks at the bottom.
Yeah. Totally. And that's, I mean, it's really like you are leaving people off.
And it matters. Like,
yeah.
Because this list can define that fine balance between profit and loss. Like, it does shape where people go, and it is really important to the restaurants who make it, which I think that is why you get the angry emails, and it's why you also saw last night, which I thought was really cool, is the first time I've been to the awards, the pride
and the
excitement that the community had to be there.
Yeah.
And it was like watching 372 win
Best Restaurant. It was so cool. Yeah. And I mean, I had been dealing with, I think, you know, a lot of the disappointed people for the last kind of month, getting, you know, occasional angry email, but also getting people like, tell us what
we... Yeah, can we have some more feedback?
And yeah, I mean, that was an editorial decision to say, yes, we are. If we're asked of it, we will give feedback. And, you know, we gave some feedback to a restaurant, and then they said, tell us more. You know, give us, like, the, you know, don't be shy about it. And they said people were, like, crying at their work, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, you know?
I found that quite tough. We... Bird on a Wire was in the Cheap Eats for 4 years in a row or something, and then we just got dropped off in the fifth year. And I didn't, to be honest, it wasn't a huge focus of mine, and I wasn't too worried. But the chef said that, my business partner, the head chef, said that her team were really upset.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I'll write to them and I'll get you some feedback.
But yeah, I mean, we had a restaurant that I won't name, but they, you know, they were... A newish restaurant, and our judge booked in on a Saturday night, 8 o'clock, I think, turned up, got told that they didn't seem to have a booking, that the booking wasn't there anymore, and that they were closing the restaurant.
Ooh.
And that's just like, if you're closing at 8 on a Saturday,
that's just not on the list because we
can't, as a magazine, send people there. And that was a restaurant that came to us, and we're like, what happened? And we're like, this is what happened.
We weren't able to dine with you.
We didn't have your food, you know, and that really sucks. But at the same time, you can't go, well, we got turned away, let's go back on Wednesday. Like, I think if you go on a Saturday night and it's closed, like.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it sucks. I mean, I do think about there is this weird, like, I talked about this before, but there is this, like, sports analogy where, like, you're not on all the time. And sometimes, like, it's really bad luck that you don't perform on the day that you have to, you know, the day that you're being judged. And
but then consistency is part of
exactly. And consistency is something that we want to recommend to our readers, you know, like, and that's what, you know,
the
magazine,
ultimate name of the game.
Yeah. And the magazine's for our readers. It's not, we love the industry. It's not a tool for the industry. It's a tool for the readers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask another question on categories?
Yeah.
So they changed, it seems. So we've got smart, and then we've got casual. And how does Are these just the city restaurants that are not the neighbourhood restaurants?
Yes.
Are then put into the categories of fine dining, casual or smart?
Yes. So, yeah. It's basically, there used to be, inner city fringe.
Yes, yeah.
Which got quite confusing.
And the word bistro
started
to sort of, I think a bistro is definitely like it's a type of restaurant, you know, and probably 10 years ago, most of those restaurants were bistros. Like, they're not anymore. Like, there are bistros in those lists for sure. Also, the city's changed so much that I think the kind of, you know, K Road used to be city fringe. You know, I think now K Road is just very much part of the city.
Yeah.
You know, there are things like that, and again, you know, there's no kind of right way to do it.
But do they compete? They only compete against each other.
Yeah.
In their own category.
Yeah. So
apart from Supreme Winner, obviously, where each of the winners compete against each other.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Except for, I mean, you know, obviously the other things around like chef and dish and all that stuff. Everyone's just sort of clumped in together. You know, every chef is eligible.
Yeah. It must be quite tricky being like Cafe Hanoi, casual. Ibisu, smart. They're like directly across from each other, both with the same crowd in them, you know?
But, yeah. And that's partly
just gotta make
presentation.
It cool.
It's partly like, I think, how you would, you know, what kind of comfort level, you know, which, you know, who would you send to those different kinds of restaurants? And, yeah, I mean, like any kind of definition of anything, there are
grey areas.
There are grey areas and people are like right at the line. And it's not easy. I mean, I look through the list and I think, you know, it can be, you know, quite clear, you know. I think Apera is a casual...
Yes.
A great casual restaurant.
Yeah.
It's much more casual than Cassia, you know, which is a smart restaurant. Yes. But it's also, you know, and then Cassia has at times
been
quite detailed and technique-driven food, but it's not fine dining, you know. Like, it's, you know, there, you know, you can get a tasting menu there, but it's not, definitely not, you know.
Yes.
It's tricky.
Well,
It seems to make sense. You seem very comfortable with where you've gone.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because, you know, it's my first year. It's Simon's first year. And when we started, Simon Farrell Green, we had a meeting at the start of the process and we were basically like, you know, let's not really change it too much in our first year and just do it. Like, let's do one where we just do it and then see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then as soon as we started doing it, we were both just like, oh, I want to change that, I want to change this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely, you know, and I also at the start of the process, read through a bunch of the old Restaurant of the Year issues, sort of going back over the last...
I've got a stack of them with a little
15
booklet.
Years, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing to see categories come and go and you realise that this is something that every editor deals with. It's like, you know, how do we do it? What are the things we do that we do because we need to do or a good idea or we should do? And then what are the things that we don't necessarily need to do but are good to do or, you know, what are the things we can get rid of? What are the things we can change? And that's just a...
You can't really ignore the trends either, can you? Because, you know, fine dining was a bit more au fait a few years ago and then we moved into bistro food and now everyone's an all-day eatery because they need to try and
I mean, used to be like an Italian category, you know? Best Italian restaurant. And you could see why in 2006 or whatever, don't quote me on that, but, you know, whenever it was, there was a number of Italian restaurants at a standard where whoever was the editor at the time deemed it valuable to readers to have a best Italian category. You know, I don't think we need that anymore. No. But like,
a lot of good Italian in the city, though.
And you should be able to put your spin on it.
Are you glad it's over? Was it? It sounded quite stressful.
It was. Yeah, it was really stressful. It's weird because. I started this, my first week on the job was the very first, we call it roti, R-O-T-Y, Restaurant of the Year, our very first roti meeting. And so to go into this room and it's like my fourth day on the job. And I'm thinking like I'm heading into a meeting with maybe, you know, a small handful of people, and just to see this like boardroom full of people, and there's people from finance and marketing and, you know, like every different sort of department, because it's such a big project for both for the magazine, but for the event, you know, and it's really, it's probably, you know, it's a huge marketing, both tool for us, but also opportunity for other, for our sort of partners and sponsors. And, you know, it's just a, it's a really big project, as well as, you know, the judging process and the editorial side. But yeah, I mean, coming down from last night's awards, and yeah, I mean, maybe it's just me maybe, but I'm just like, oh, I just can't wait to kind of start again, like, yeah. Because there's, you know, there's so many things I want to, now that I've done it once, like, I already want to do it again, like, and keep it moving. And, you know, we want to grow it, and Peugeot, who's our main sponsor, like, you know, they want to grow it.
I think it would be cool if you filmed it, because I didn't go last night, but I went last year. And, I mean, maybe it's because I love the industry so much, but I would argue that it's a really wonderful energy in the room, full of people that are really proud of not only what they're doing, but it was really world class in the sense that people were being awarded specifically for, they're the most passionate hospitality people in the country. And for me, I was like, people were winning awards and doing speeches, and I had like tears rolling down my face.
I mean, I had, you know, I just had so many feels last night, and it was just so great. But, you know, I mean, we talked about Pat before, and, you know, that's just like, you know, I just want to get another judge next year. And, you know, we've in the magazine, we've made, you'll see we've got this kind of, not awards, but we've got a regional section of sort of our picks of restaurants outside of Auckland. We've picked 30 restaurants, which either restaurants that the judging panel have been to or go to when they leave Auckland.
From around New Zealand.
Yeah, and so we also sent a few people on visits for those. That's not, we haven't given awards because we haven't done it with the same rigor, but that's something that, you know, I'd love to do if we could make it work.
Yeah, I'm,
you know,
just looking at it now, and I've actually been to 99% of those restaurants. And
are you showing off?
That's not what I mean. What I mean is that it's so great that, you know, I often feel as though I do loads of research when I'm going away and try not to miss anything and try and see what's recent.
Yeah.
And, you know, your publication is aimed at Aucklanders, but it's so important not to dine next to the place that you should be dining at when you've got limited time.
And I mean, we've got, we've recently relaunched our website, metromag.co.nz. And
spinoff.co.nz/food.
And it's, you know, every day, not, you know, most days in the top 10 stories that people are on is where to eat in Wellington. You know, and that's, and that's been like, that's not something I would have known coming into the job, you know, that would be, it's, you know, it's not, you know, it's not hundreds of people on the story at once, but it's just there kind of all the time.
Totally.
There's people associating our brand with this type of content.
Telling
and even if it's out of Auckland, you know, it's here's what we like in Wellington. People still find it's still useful to people. And so, you know, this is an area where I would like to grow it. You know, I mentioned the international guest judge, just continuing to expand the panel and, you know, and trying to expand it, like, to be honest, like commercially, and bring in more money, so we can
go to more restaurants. Too, you know, like it says things like we like Earl very much. The White House in Wanaka doesn't mention the lunatic that owns it. You should send someone there.
Simon loves that restaurant.
It is absolutely hysterical. Yeah. The guy was rolling a joint while we were paying our bill last time we were there, and he just tells people to fuck off if he's too busy when they come in the door. And heaps of people hate it, but the food is epic.
Well, Simon was like, "Oh, I've got this place in Wanaka. It's amazing, but people will hate us for it."
I
was like, "Oh, you got to put that. You have to put that."
It sound really tame, which is what I think is quite funny. I look forward to you getting some feedback.
Well, congratulations, Henry. It was excuse me. It was a really good night, and not a small feat. And I'm worried that you're like a pregnant woman who forgets what it's. Oh, sorry, a woman who forgets what it's like to give birth. For the fact that you want to go and do it all again.
Yeah. I think that's what making a magazine is like. every issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like finish it and you're like, shit.
Who was the MC this year?
It was me.
And
Simon Farrell Green. Yeah, we did the whole thing. And that was, I mean, that was.
This year, like last year.
Dynamic duo.
That was kind of part of it. Like,
all good in your own ways.
I think we thought that it was kind of more honest and sort of more direct to, like, you know, we're the ones that are really responsible for.
Yeah, you're going to stand up and face it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it was good.
And I think, like, it felt right that, you know, not only do we celebrate the achievements of the winners and, you know, hand them awards and shake their hands and all of that, but, you know, like, you're also telling people you didn't win.
Yeah,
and it's me telling you that, you know, like, and
yeah, that's nice.
And then you get off stage, and they're there, and you talk to them afterwards, and you know, I see the advantage.
Was quite a hoot last year.
I'm sure, yeah.
But I have to say, I wasn't. Yeah, I guess I didn't. He was a professional MC more than a food person.
Yeah, and that's part of. I mean, you know, that's part of it. And it
made for some good lols. But
there's no way Clark looked as good as you did.
Oh,
last
thank
night.
You.
Never seen Henry looking so flash, although he still was wearing a t-shirt. But
guys, I need to see some photos.
I've got some.
If you want,
but
there
was another thing where we could, like, you know, that was some. Let's be honest, that was some money we could shave off, and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Getting this guy from Australia is really expensive, and you know, like it's all about kind of priorities,
decisions.
You know, yeah,
yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I think it was a good call.
I'm really, really gutted I wasn't there.
Well, to finish. The biggest reason you should be gutted that you weren't there, and I'd like to finish our chat about the awards by giving out my own final award, and that's to Sexiest Chef in Auckland 2019.
Yep.
Darius Lolaie.
It's always got to be him.
He's so hot.
Darius is handsome as
we love you, Darius.
I want Darius to rescue me from the bush and carry me out on his shoulders.
Like a pig. He's just shot. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the hunting analogy.
But into our little segment section. Our first today is our new one, OTP. It's our drinks segment, Alice, on the purse.
Got it. Oh, yeah. I know. I've read the email. Carry on.
We made it up on the fly last month, so.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to remember things when you're embedded in ice cream. Today we're drinking the Ponsonby Road Bistro's Bloody Mary. Melissa and her team won the award last night for Best Drinks List.
Again.
So we gave her a quick call this morning, and she sent an audio message via WhatsApp.
That's very charming.
Melissa did.
Yeah.
I am flabbergasted. I struggled to get an email back from her.
Dictating the recipe for her Bloody Mary. Do you want to tell us about it, Alice?
Yes, I will. First, I'd like to apologise because it's far too diluted because I couldn't get cold tomato juice, so I just got it from Countdown. So I put heaps of ice in, but now the ice is melted and it's all a bit watery. However,
I think it's delicious.
Think it's really okay. Good.
Yeah, so what you do, says Melissa, is...
I'm looking forward to her descriptive language.
Yes. She started by saying, I kind of transcribed it, the recipe for the best Bloody Mary. Now, what's her voice? It's kind of South African.
It's South African, anyway. But yeah, people think she's British.
Yeah, so vodka... She said, you might want to, 60 mils of vodka, you might want to make it 75 mils.
Oh, go wild, Melissa.
This is all in one glass. A heaped teaspoon of horseradish, about a tablespoon of freshly juiced lemon juice, a generous splash of Worcestershire sauce, I like quite a bit, a generous shaking of Tabasco sauce, to your preference, but we believe eye-poppingly hot is good, a big slosh of medium cream sherry, we left that out because we're not bougie enough.
We couldn't find any sherry at the last minute.
Crack of pepper,
sure it'd be good.
Big pinch of good salt, and if you just stir that gently together, take your tomato juice, which is chilled, so you don't have to add too much ice. We don't like diluting our drinks too much with water. That's the problem with mine. Shake the bottle of tomato juice, top up the glass, put in a few cubes of ice, then a lovely big crack of pepper on the top. And then I seem to have cut off the bit where she said... Garnish with a lovely stick of celery, and if they sometimes put a jalapeno pepper or some nice green olives on a
they
stick,
do,
chuck
yes.
it in there. Nice.
Why do Bloody Marys work? I know for one thing, the peak of your hangover is when you're finally at zero blood alcohol and you're going into massive withdrawals.
Oh. Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it just the hair of the dog?
So you're treating your withdrawals, but is it also because you're having like One of your five plus a day? Two of your five plus a day?
I mean, I love the intense. You can probably tell yourself
I love
that.
The savouriness, the umami of a Bloody Mary. Oh, it's so good.
I think the spice is also...
Spice is important, yeah.
Often people say that spice helps with their hangover. That's why I like the ramen particularly spicy.
I think Bloody Marys is one of the highest risk drinks. That a good Bloody Mary is so good. A bad Bloody Mary is one of the worst bad drinks. It's just awful.
Warm and done badly. I think if they miss the horseradish, it's always disappointing. And I also think that there is an element of Bloody Marys. Often it's the second one that is the cure. So it is just you're forgetting about the hangover because you're getting a bit pissed again. Yeah.
So in Cook's Corner, Henry, we offer a tip. About, you know, from our own personal knowledge of cooking for our readers.
Yep.
My one this week is after a little online debate about raw red onions. I think raw red onions are disgusting.
I saw that.
I think they're overpowering. I'll wake up in the morning and I can not just taste it, I can feel it in my mouth.
Does this include a raw red onion that has been soaked in water or anything else?
I think that was going to be his tip.
That's my tip.
Oh, sorry.
So I find
it's going to be my tip, damn it.
I can deal with raw red onions if they've been soaked in vinegar or lemon juice. And I haven't tried water, but that's the tips that the tips the chefs gave out.
My tip.
Do you know what? I'm with you, though. Raw onion that hasn't been soaked stays with me. So in the way that garlic does for some people, I can still taste it 12 hours later.
Yeah, repeats on you.
Soak your onions, Ben Grant.
Mm. Yeah.
Who's next?
My one was just going to be soaking it in cold water, which is easier than soaking it in lemon juice or vinegar because you just go to the tap and you only need to do it for 10, 15 minutes and it does take the bite out.
I also think that people that don't like raw red onion often do like pickled red onion.
Yes.
So soaking in a bit of Chardonnay vinegar, they go pretty in purple.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
And very thinly sliced.
Yeah. Mm.
Tip from Samuel Flynn Scott is slice them vertically, and it means you're breaking.
Disrupting less of the membrane.
So less crying, less intensity of flavour.
Yeah, that's clever.
Did you learn anything interesting in the US to share with us?
All I did was eat, Simon.
No cooking.
No. But I've got some cooking, a cooking tip or two. I think as we come into the winter season, I would recommend that people don't cut and throw away the top green part of the leek. I'm in favour of using the whole vegetable. And if they are really fibrous and dry, then at least keep them and put them in your stock for all your winter soups and things.
That's a good tip.
I think another one, just on the soup note, is that peeling ginger is another one that people struggle with wasting quite a lot of the flesh. So the way to do that is to get a teaspoon.
I think we've had this tip before section. So sorry, Sophie. Oh, no. See you. It's been fun, but you're out.
Okay, use the leek, everyone. Use the leek.
But also, just don't even peel your ginger. I throw whole pieces in smoothies. I just grate it with the skin. Like, no one's even going to know. You're not trying to get an award from Henry. Just use the skin.
You don't want a big, you should be bit trying of skin, to get awards
in all part of your life, yeah?
Yeah, diamond.
I don't have a technical tip so much as I love chicken and I love wine and I love cooking chicken and wine.
Yeah.
I love coq au vin. And recently I've switched to making it with white wine.
Yes.
Coq au vin blanc. And tip, I love it. Great. Get in there.
Is coq au vin blanc a thing?
It's a thing.
Yeah.
No, it's a thing. It's an underrated thing.
Is it a Marcella Hazan recipe?
I don't know, just riff.
So she's kind of like the godmother of Italian cooking, and her spaghetti bolognese is the one that's like three different meats and with milk, and that has white wine, not red. Fun fact.
So we've got 2 minutes before we break an hour, and I really don't want to. So where was the last great meal you had recently for our Last Supper segment? And what did you particularly enjoy? I loved the treacle butter at the tasting shed. Mm. They gave me a whole bunch to take away, and I put it on crumpets. It was Easter, so I put it on hot cross buns. It's so good. The sweet and savoury just...
That and the sage in the ice cream at the tasting shed I thought was really delicious. Simon and I were at the same lunch and he put butter on his bread and I did the same thing and we looked at each other like, are you tasting this shit? It was so delicious.
Last week was my birthday, I think.
Happy birthday.
And for my birthday lunch, I went to Hahn.
I've never been. I invented the crispy calamari pancake.
It's delicious. That place, it's really good.
So I think my mum might be working for them. She keeps forwarding me their weekly mailer. I'm not sure why.
I had not judged them during the judges period, but having talked to people who had, I talked to a couple of judges who had been there, and I was like, I just got to go.
Food sounds good.
And they're lovely people.
Oh, they're so nice.
Yeah.
Food's great. It's quite a weird fit out, but it's quite cool. It's got these like pipes
and
stuff.
It's kind of steampunkish, almost.
There's this, I really want to go with a big group of people. There's this like cage kind of seat, which is like a circular table.
Oh, like the jacuzzi of blueberries.
Maybe, maybe like eight seats that's kind of in this like bird cage thing. It's cool.
Cool.
Alice, where have you been eating?
I went to Wellington recently and I really enjoyed 1154 Pastaria.
Oh, my
really
gosh.
Cool.
I'm obsessed with that place.
It's so good.
I follow them on Instagram.
It's kind of like pasta fast food, but in a good way. You order at the counter. I had the triangulari, which is like little parcels of pea and ricotta stuff, sage, brown butter sauce, hazelnuts. It's like swimming in, you know, brown butter sauce.
Where is that?
Bun, a little bread bun to mop it up. Delicious natural wine. It's on Cuba Street.
Yeah, it's literally so opposite Scopa and it's owned by the same people.
Yeah, if I had it here, I'd go like every day.
I have Maybe always wanted, well, Simon's friends have got a pasta shop here in Mount Eden, but I've always thought that it would be cool to do something like that.
Love you, Stefania.
So it was nice seeing you.
Yes, you do. Okay, the best meal I've had recently, that's quite tricky. I've just been on holiday in the States. I'm going to mention the dessert that we were served at 11 Madison Park because I've never eaten anything that's so umami that your mouth is watering while you're eating it. I'm not really into dessert typically. You won't hear me recommend dessert, but I had a Maya lemon and sesame parfait. And honestly, I cannot explain to you how bizarre it was. As soon as I put it in my mouth, I started salivating.
Wow.
And it had quite a lot of salt in it and the savouriness from the
I love sesame and dessert. Sorry, I'm eating a cheesel.
Oh my gosh.
We've noticed.
I forgot to try a cheesel.
Yeah, sorry. I have been eating a lot of cheesels this
This is my first ever cheesel, just to wrap it up.
What?
Oh, give it an online review.
It's going to blow your mind.
What do you think?
She's loving it. Eyes are rolling back in her
head. It tastes better than I thought it would.
It's amazing.
That's cheezels, my final offer.
Cheesel's better than you thought.
Out of 10?
That's my last great meal, that bag of cheesels.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can see how you'd keep going. Oh
isn't that Hamilton's city slogan?
More than you'd expect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not as shit as you thought it'd be.
And the final recommendation on my hangover ramen is $1.99 from the supermarket. It's in a red packet, and it's called Shin Ramyun noodle soup.
I'd actually like you to put that recipe on the spinoff.co.nz. It had fresh corn, chopped spring onions, egg in it,
butter.
Had dumplings. It was covered in butter, and it was so good.
It's how to chop from home when you can't leave the sofa.
Hangover over.
Yeah. Good.
Well, thanks for joining us, Henry. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Henry.
Good luck next year.
Thanks, guys.
Did you put on weight?
Yeah.
You seem to be as lean as a bean all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know you, but it doesn't look like it.
I'm not a big fluctuator. Mm.
I put on 11 kgs but, in 3 weeks when I went to Italy.
Yeah, I'm nervous about the New York.
I was also like eating out a lot and I was so full that I was at home, like just having like a small bit of plain bread.
Yeah.
I reckon I put on a few kilos at the marae this weekend. I did a marae stay and I ate a lot of.
It's a tough job, guys. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're here to do it for you. Thank you all for listening. See you next month.
Thank you. Bye.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off.
If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.